Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My special guest today is Gary Wyckoff, Office of Naval Research Chief Information Officer. Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So this is in some ways a return trip for the Office of Naval Research, but for you, this is the first time you're on the show. Now, I have not had someone, or I should say the CIO from the ONR on, for almost 5 years. So there's a lot that's changed, I'm just guessing, over the last 5 years. So we're going to start at the beginning. 5 years ago, when I talked to your CIO at the time, the big priority was cloud computing. We know where cloud is today throughout the government. Just give me a sense of what ONR is doing around cloud computing.
Cloud still is important to us today, and we have several efforts going towards that now that should come to fruition probably in the next 6 to 10 months. We started back in 2010, probably when you talked to my predecessor. He was working with Oracle on their on-demand cloud computing service and software as a service. They had started down, I guess, about 2008 on that series. Because of several things that happened, we ended up not going forward. After about 3 years and about $8 million, we weren't any closer. But there were a lot of technical issues that cloud hadn't even begun to approach. Security was a big issue in there. How are we going to reduce security? How are we going to connect to the commercial websites? So those things ended up coming together, a force that couldn't be overcome, and we decided to halt. So today we've got several projects going. One, most advanced, is moving our SharePoint knowledge management site into the Amazon Web Services. We've gotten approval from Don CIO. We've briefed up the chain of command, and we're ready to execute. Right now, we're in a holding pattern, waiting on, again, the DOD to sign a gig waiver so we can have a connection from DISA to a commercial site, pretty much where we were with Oracle On Demand. We're assured, but Don CIO is working with us, and we're supposed to be in the pilot program, us and the NIPO office, Navy NIPO office, to be the first ones to go. Should be any day now. I suspect it'll be within the next 30 to 45 days. They'll provision our circuit and we can begin our initial testing.
And let me just jump in there. When you talk about SharePoint knowledge management, this is your typical just SharePoint in the cloud type of functionality. This is nothing out of the ordinary.
That's correct. It's SharePoint out of the box. We've built our system, our knowledge management system around it, a way to share information amongst the command. It's restricted only. Right now the access is restricted internally. So it's not the information we have is inside sources, not available to the outside world.
And then some other cloud, you said there was a couple going on, so that was the furthest along, 30 to 45 days out. What else?
The other project we have running is with our SPAWAR group in San Diego, and that's moving our Remedy help desk software and purchasing software as a service Remedy from them and running that in the cloud. So we won't have the servers here. We'll be connecting to the SPAWAR instance in San Diego and running our help desk software, if you will, out there. And we're working through some of the final processes with them. SPAWAR is coming next week. We're shooting for a December initial operational capability, and we're moving forward on that.
And the theory behind that is almost like a shared service where you're insourcing but outsourcing the help desk features to SPAWAR.
The help desk will still be run here, but the software tracking mechanisms, asset management, change management, all of those things will be tracked in SPAWAR through the Remedy system. We're kind of doing an enterprise license, if you will, and they're going to operate that in the cloud. We will still maintain Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3 help desk on site.
I'm glad you were able to offer some explanation because people hear help desk and they think that's your setup. Mm-hmm. How do you guys do that now, the asset management, the other types of oversight? Is it all done in-house currently and you're just kind of putting that in the cloud to be run by SPAWAR?
Correct. That's currently right now we have the data center runs here at our site. We run an instance of Remedy's BMC software Remedy here, and the pricing that we pay by an enterprise license, we pay much more per capita, if you will, per person, than we will when we go into the enterprise license. Plus, we will have different modules, which I said right now we have the change management and asset management modules, but now we'll be able to have a FAQ section. We'll be able to track problems through the end, like incident management, and it all goes together with our implementation of IDLE.
Which actually is another question we're going to get to in a minute. So let me, before we get there, first, you talk about you'll have less cost per person and more capabilities. Do you have a sense yet of how much the difference in cost is going to be?
Well, from an overall perspective, we do. Right now, with the maintenance, we have an older system to upgrade to get the modules that we don't have. will be about $1.5 million to $2 million to implement the full suite. We're going to Spey War. The cost will be somewhere, I think it's around $800,000 a year for us, so it's a significant savings. Plus, we start moving forward with the Navy implementation of data center consolidation, which is to close the data center here. That's about 4 servers that we currently run now that we will not have to run, and we push that over the edge, if you will.
Now, let's talk a little bit about data center consolidation. That may come up later as well. How many data centers do you guys have, and how are you kind of meeting the goals of the Navy plan?
Currently, we have 1 data center, which is right here at ONR. I won't talk about our global office. Our global is different from us. But we have 1 data center. It's here in Arlington. Our goal, of course, is through consolidation sometime late 16, 7, early 17 calendar time year to be in a consolidated center, whether that's at Spey War, at DISA, or a commercial cloud. We don't know just yet. We started a business case analysis that kicked off last week. We have a tiger team, if you will, looking at that, looking at the alternatives. Where are we going? What's currently available? Pricing? All of those things and capabilities all come together. We did the same thing when we moved the SharePoint to AWS. We looked at several alternatives, including the iNavy portal. And you know, the Navy's goal is to about 70% commercial. So we've stepped out on the commercial side on that side. I don't know where we'll end up today. I know they're talking to some of the different vendors, Microsoft, Oracle. They're all willing to host their products very easily. It's when you bring the oddball software programs in there. We are a science and technology group. We do have some odd duck software that may not play as well in the cloud and may not play very well in anybody's cloud. So we have to look at that and how that's going to affect everything as we move forward.
Now, immediately when you think of DoD, you think of classified information, or at least very sensitive information. How much does that play a role into that decision-making process? Meaning, no matter where you go, it's got to be a private cloud, or could you see yourself go maybe some kind of hybrid situation where maybe some private, some public? I know you're just at the beginning stages, but just knowing the data that you guys do hold, do you see yourselves leaning one way or another?
Right now, no. So from our SIPR side, that's in the Navy Marine Corps intranet. Nothing will move there. On our other side, we have business sensitive. We have PII, acquisition sensitive information that we really don't want to go out. One of the ways we're looking at that with Amazon is encryption at rest and secure tunnels to and from, PKI enabling, CAC single sign-on kinds of things to protect the data. We would look for that type of security architecture moving private or public. But again, you know, most of our information is not classified, but it is business sensitive. We do have to take very sharp precautions with it. And so I think, you know, encryption at rest, HTTPS connectivity will probably give us most of what we need, if not all of what we need.
I know just talking to a lot of other CIOs, that is one of the concerns, and I'll use that lightly, not like, not will it work, but can it be done, and how well can it work, and what's the delay? Because, I mean, I think one of the things about cloud is that access anywhere, but then you have to have your CAT card reader or the token reader at the same time. Obviously, when you guys made the decision to go to the private sector for that type of instance, the bid showed that they could do it, so you must have some pretty good confidence that this is something that's easily doable, or at least maybe not easily doable, but doable.
Easily doable. If everything was easily doable, it would be great. We've actually worked with them on the architecture and Spey War, and we specified the security model that we needed, which was the encryption at rest. We needed the secure connectivity. They were willing to work with us on those things. Plus, we're going to host the Computer Network Defense Suite here at ONR. And so that will be here. We'll control that. The private sector won't control that. So we'll have that, and then we're the ones that are going to set up the CAC access, the role-based access. So we'll be the ones generating the accounts and who has access to what.
And then it just goes through your system to the Amazon cloud eventually. That's the idea, was if you log on to your computer, there's kind of a, I'll use the word term middleware, maybe that's not the best word for it, but that's where the handshake happens. It allows you to where you need to go. Do I have that basically right?
That's correct. Just like we use OID for Oracle and the identity identification. You know, we have the CAC handshake that happens, and then boom, you're in. But again, it's based on your EDPI, what you have, what accesses you have, you get to go to those areas. So there'll be areas that some users cannot get to. Right now, our initial setup will have the codes, the ONR office codes, restricted just for their codes right now. Later on, as we move forward, the site administrators of each one of those sites could grant another individual from another organization access to their site. But initially, it's set up, so it'd be, I hate to say stovepipe, but it will be, just to make sure the security model works.
All right, very good. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll catch up on a couple other old priorities. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Wyckoff, the Office of Naval Research's Chief Information Officer.
Just how secure is your data and your network, and how efficient are your IT operations? Splunk can help provide the answers that are keeping federal IT decision-makers and managers awake at night. Proven at hundreds of federal agencies, Splunk software transforms machine data into real-time insights. Defend against cybersecurity risks. Reduce IT operational costs. Download Splunk, listen to your data, and get some rest. Learn more about the company that everyone is talking about at splunk.com/public sector. Brought to you by Splunk and Carahsoft.
The Cloud Security Assessment Report is brought to you by Technical and Management Resources.
The Labor Department intends to issue a solicitation for cloud business process management support services. The OWL's Employment and Training Administration wants to modernize its current application architecture and add technology capabilities within the cloud. By using a modern commercial off-the-shelf product like a BPM tool, it's looking for an automated solution to accomplish what the program needs while at the same time being easily modifiable. Responses are due September 2nd.
GSA has confidence in small businesses. Alliance Small Business completed its first 5 years, graduating 21 businesses from small to large and proving small businesses can do the job required by the federal government. Alliance Small Businesses provide an exceptional resource for the federal government to meet their objectives. I'm Dan Looper, chair of the Alliance Small Business Industry Council. If you require information for potential partnering opportunities, call 703-323-1700 or visit advancedalliance.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by Airbus Group.
Deputy Secretary of Defense Bob Work is going to the Asia-Pacific region soon. The goal is to strengthen multilateral security cooperation in the region to build more robust partnerships, and the Pentagon says he's going to discuss ongoing efforts in regional security. During the week-long trip, he's going to visit Guam, Hawaii, Japan, and the Republic of Korea. He's going to visit military bases and personnel and civilians as well. I'm J.J. Green.
Just overhead, an Airbus medevac helicopter races to the scene of an accident. At 20,000 feet, a Coast Guard crew searches out drug smugglers from an Airbus Ocean Sentry. Far above in space, an Airbus Ariane 5 rocket delivers a satellite to monitor water pollution. While back on the ground, a new Airbus A320 assembly line in Alabama will provide jobs for thousands of Americans. Airbus Group. We connect and protect at every level.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Wyckoff, the Office of Naval Research's Chief Information Officer. Now, Gary, before break, we're talking a lot about some older priorities. One of those older priorities back from the last time I spoke with someone from ONR back in 2009 was mobile computing. Again, so much has changed over the last 5 years with mobility and mobile computing. Give me a sense, how are you guys implementing it today? Where are you heading with it?
Well, mobile computing is still a challenge in DOD because of, again, security of the devices. If you lose a device, what's on that device? So one of the things that we've been looking at in my strategic plan, we'll start talking about it, is we have a traveling workforce, and they're hauling laptops around, and they want to make life easier. And we're looking at smartphones, iPhones, tablets, Windows tablets, those kinds of things. But, again, coming back to the Navy network, we run on the Navy Marine Corps Intranet, NMCI, so there are restrictions of what we can use, what we can't use. We can use iPads to connect to the Outlook web access, but you can't get back into the network with those. The same with WinPads, Windows tablets, and any of the tablets. As long as you're CAC-enabled, you can connect to mail, but you can't get back into the network. In our strategic plan this year, we start talking about looking at different devices. So we are trying now to move forward a little bit. So one of the experimental areas that we're going down is to look at iPads and Win tablets with a device called MobiKey. And MobiKey is accepted by NMCI. And again, everything has to be CAC-enabled to start with. But MobiKey will create a virtual desktop on your device, and it will link back to your home desktop. So every service that is running on your desktop back at your headquarters will be run on your portable device, and then you can do whatever you need to do, and it's self-contained, and it's encrypted. So if you lose it, you lose the device, it's just an encrypted folder, and there's nothing you can do with it. So we're looking at those kinds of things. We haven't gone down that road yet. We're just starting to do that. We're hopeful. MobiKey has proven very, very successful for our reserve forces. They're using that with some of the mobile devices. But to me, the longer-term answer is some kind of encryption device and encrypted your portable device, and you can bring your own device. I know a lot of people talk about bring your own device, and there's many issues to be addressed before we ever get there, such as who pays for it, who owns it, and so we can't even go there yet. But to me, one of the things, and I don't want to be a shill for Microsoft, but to me, we're Microsoft Office. If we could use iPads and Windows phones, and my desktop replicates exactly on that device, I'm good to go. My user is comfortable with what they've got, and away we can go. So that's where we're right now at mobile. I think we'll do the MobiKey study with some of our key travelers over the next 6 to 9 months, and then maybe we can start to move away from the laptop desktop issue and just be using the portable pads and tablets.
It's interesting. So virtual desktop, VDI is what you're talking about here. When you talk about MobiKey, is it kind of a thumb drive or some kind of way the device would then, because I know you can't use a thumb drive on a tablet, but for instance, I've heard about on like laptops, you stick a thumb drive in it, and that's what everything runs off of. It's that same concept. In your case, not a thumb drive, but it would just be a almost like a sandbox.
Correct. It creates, again, a virtual tunnel, if you will, back to your system that's encrypted, and that's how it works. So it sticks in in one of the ports, and away you go. It's not a thumb drive. It doesn't have any inherent material recorded on it, so if you lose it, it's separate from everything else. Again, you just have a MobiKey, and if you plug that MobiKey into another device, it won't work because it's specific to the user for setting up a tunnel.
You said it already is being used with NMCI or NGen, whatever it's going to be called now. How's it being used now? Is it through the laptops?
It's being used through laptops initially, and then the reserve forces are trying to set up tests to do like we want to do using tablets and iPads.
Has there been a big push from your community to use these mobile devices beyond laptops? You mentioned scientists, and a lot of times when I've talked to other scientific organizations, the scientists are usually out in front in some way, or they're demanding access to different software titles or different pieces of hardware. Or do people realize, hey, I do work for DoD, there are limits?
You must know our users pretty well. our users would love to have the latest and greatest of everything. iPhones, iPads, Google tablets, Droid tablets, whatever they want that they want. I think they're frustrated to some level with the DoD restrictions. Right now, all we can do is use from a portable side is BlackBerries. And so BlackBerry, you can do your mail on it. That's pretty much the end of the extent with all the restrictions that are on it. I mean, you can see some attachments on it, but again, it's very limiting. And so I think it's interesting when some of the folks, the staff that use it, who read some of the documents and are complaining that the screen's too small, I don't know what they think they're going to get when they get a portable device. You know, part of it has to be better resolution at the display level, and so we'll have to work that. Some of our applications that we're looking at putting in the cloud, when we do, we're going to look, one, can they play in the cloud properly? And then, two, what reengineering do we have to do so they can render on a mobile device correctly so you aren't pushing it all over the pad trying to read what's going on?
How much does that play into your thinking today? Meaning, when you look at software, and you mentioned working with Spaceware on certain software pieces, software packages like SharePoint, for instance, are you looking at different pieces of software going, okay, in a year from now, in 6 months from now, can that be mobilized? If that's a real word, maybe we just made one up. But does that play into your thinking a lot right now, or is that something that's going to happen maybe 6 months from now because that's when the pilot will begin and that's when you really jump into it?
So from the standpoint of with AWS and the SharePoint instance, we haven't really thought about that mobile component yet. The first piece was moving that to the cloud and see what happens next. However, with our data center consolidation business case analysis that we're doing, that plays into it largely because we want to know what applications have to be re-engineered now, because that represents a cost to us that if we keep the data center here that we don't incur, but as we move forward, we're going to have to maybe have to re-engineer not only so they display properly, but any latency and timeout issues, we've got to address those. So those are all being going to be looked at in that business case analysis.
And that's part of that data center, as you said. So timing-wise, I mean, would you foresee starting to move or mobilize applications, you know, a year, 18 months from now? Or is it happening kind of as you are renewing those apps as the, for instance, the licenses come due?
So the business case analysis is looking, won't be done probably till late spring, early summer next year. At that point, I think we will then begin to start to look at that mobilization, if you will, your word. And we'll see how that plays out. We do know right now that a couple of our applications are going to retire just because we're moving to Navy ERP. We'll take some of that. We have a couple of applications that are running 11i Oracle and they or 11G, and they will go to 12i. When they go to 12i, which we're scheduling for next summer, we would probably then begin to look at how we begin to mobilize those. So when they do move, that component is already built in. And then when we transition a year later into the data center, we'll have already hopefully finished that work, and it would be mobile capable.
All right, very good. Something to look out for. Let's jump to a fourth party from last time, which was business processes. You gave us a little bit of a heads up about ITIL. Give us a little sense of what you're doing with ITIL, how you're implementing it, and where you're at with that implementation.
Okay, so business process, because there are a couple of things going on. We have a command business office, and they are pretty much us owners of process and things that happen. So they, with ERP, have been working with the processes of grants and contracts and how those things work through and then mapping them to ERP. So from the ITIL side, from the CIO side, and one of the things that I want to move to ITIL, so the first thing we do is get all the staff trained up on ITIL, made them take the test to get certified. Many were frustrated, but that's the way it goes because if we've got to do it, everybody's got to understand it. So everybody's certified to do that. We have a group working with us, SPAWAR, with the Remedy, who are ITIL certified folks. And we have stood up an information technology system management office, ITSMO, as we call it. And they're the spur for ITIL. They're working through rewriting processes, documenting processes, and then baselining those processes to make sure that they work the way we believe they work and become repeatable outcomes each time. That's one of my frustrations here is that sometimes there's very little documented process, and so sometimes we fly by the seat of our pants, and when we get the same outcome twice, it's lucky. Most of the time, we don't get the same outcome twice. And so I've been working through that for just about the 4 years I've been here, and I think we're finally getting close to that. I can see it with our VTC systems. We have a process now in place that instead of just turning it on, letting the users go, the day before, we sit down with the user who's going to have a conference, go through the setup system, connect to the far end, show them that it works, everybody agrees it works, and then the day of the conference, about an hour ahead of time, they go up, establish the conference, have everything linked up, everybody agrees it's working, and so those kinds of things are moving forward. The help desk, getting back to the users within a two-hour window, letting them know you've received a help desk ticket, be it by a telephone or an email, and you're working to tell them what's going on. So we're working through those things little by little. Same with backups, system backups, from recording the backups, when we've done them, when we've done restores, when we've done tests. All of those things are now being documented over and over.
Did you get a sense of why things weren't repeatable? Was it just a lack of training? Was it just people were busy, lack of staff? Or was maybe there's 100 other reasons?
There are lots of reasons. My sense was the contractor at the time was allowed to do what they thought they needed to do. Government oversight was lacking, to say the least. And so eventually the contractor knew they couldn't do some things the way, or they didn't have to do what they were supposed to do. They could let it slide till the next time and next time because there was nobody checking what's going on. Now we're going back. I've had a couple of sessions, what I call the voice of the customer, where they've told us, hey, you guys don't do this, you don't do that. So we've worked on that over the 4 years, listening to the voice of the customer, telling us, how come I come to you this time, you tell me this, next time you tell me that. We haven't eliminated all that. We're getting better, though. And I think that's kind of the root of it, was just the flux that was built in.
All right, I know that's a challenge for a lot of CIOs, so it's good to hear you guys seem to be starting to have some success with ITIL. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll jump into some new priorities that we haven't already touched upon. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Wyckoff, the Office of Naval Research's Chief Information Officer.
Here's Frank Konechny, CTO in the Office of Information Dominance and CIO of the Air Force, on the Truth About IT OpEx and Software-Defined Networking panel discussion sponsored by Avaya Government Solutions.
Now, as we get inside the network itself, inside the WAN, you're going to get more experiences of applications running that have to run, which is quality of service, which we do monitor a lot of. But again, the network is essential to everything that we do.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Mission critical operations require an infrastructure to match with enterprise class reliability, unparalleled performance, and uncompromising security. Avaya Government Solutions delivers on those requirements with solutions for unified communications, contract centers, data networking, video, and mobility. Each is available as an on-site, managed, or cloud-hosted solution. Explore how Avaya Government Solutions transforms federal networks into agencies of the future. Learn more at avayagov.com.
Experts have been talking about the promise of cloud technology for some time now.
The cloud will transform how America works.
You've also heard them talk about its advantages.
The cloud will reduce government cost and improve productivity.
And you've heard this.
The cloud will deliver security across the entire platform.
Now there's a cloud that delivers on those promises. Introducing AT&T Cloud Solutions for Government. Our portfolio of solutions provides agencies the confidence that comes with the security of the AT&T network, with end-to-end integration for greater security, reliability, and performance.
Government agencies will serve the nation confidently using the cloud.
Find out how AT&T Cloud Solutions for Government can give your agency the confidence that comes only with the security of the AT&T network. Visit att.com/gov/cloud, designed to meet FedRAMP certification. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Are you ready to see the Earth like never before? The Ball Aerospace Worldview 3 imaging satellite is set to launch August 13th. Going above and beyond to provide superior pictures of the Earth to aid multiple missions, from agriculture to national security. Worldview 3, built by Ball Aerospace for Digital Globe, will return the most accurate, high-resolution commercial satellite imagery ever available. Agility to innovate, strength to deliver. Visit BallAerospace.com. That's BallAerospace.com.
This hour of news is brought to you by Boeing, delivering the enduring capability and value of the P-8A Maritime Patrol aircraft to the United States Navy, on time and on budget.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Glenn Delgado, the Associate Administrator of NASA's Office of Small Business Programs.
The senior management and I work together to make sure before any procurement goes forward that we're involved in that planning, what we call the market research, or looking for sources for the businesses. And then as we get all that research in, that's when we make the decision whether we can go small business if there's opportunities there, or if it goes full and open, and what would be the subcontracting opportunities based on the responses we get.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Wyckoff, the Chief Information Officer for the Office of Naval Research. Now, Gary, before break, we were talking a whole lot about older priorities. I know you marbled in some new ones in there. We talked cloud. We talked mobility. But let's talk about some newer priorities. What are you looking to get done? What's on your agenda over the next 6 or 9 months?
So we've laid out a strategic plan. We've been doing it the last couple of years I've been here, trying to focus, kind of a five-year window. But usually the first 18 months of the plan is pretty much solid, because that's what you can really do. And then after 18 months, it gets a little jello-like after that. So for the next coming months, cloud is obviously a biggie, coupled with our mobile devices, rolling all those together, trying to find out where we go with that, what we can do with that. And then, of course, on top of all that rides cyber. How does cyber play into all this? We go to the cloud, we have to be protected. Anything we keep here, we have to be protected. Mobile devices have to be protected. So we pretty much have to be worried about that. So cyber permeates pretty much everything in the strategic world.
When you put together your strategic plan, what's the process? Do you have kind of an executive governance board, and then you have a lower board? Or is that something that's something your office does, and kind of you throw it up the chain and down the chain and see what comments you get back?
All the above. Pretty much in the beginning, when I came here, strategic planning was not happening. And so I sat down kind of individually thinking about where I wanted to go. And now that I have a full staff, I've engaged them in the discussion. Where do we want to go? What do we want to do? And for next year, we're going to establish a forum with the leadership of ONR and sit down and ask the customer, what do you want? Now, I have compliance things I have to do. There's DOD rules, Navy rules. I have to comply with all of those. But then beyond that, Where do they want to go? Where does their customer base want to go with the technology? I know they would like to go mobile. They would like to go space age. You know, they see the touch walls on the NCIS TV show. I'm sure they would like to have touch walls everywhere. Is that possible? Probably, but to what extent? What do you need them for? And that's part of it is the strategic planning is a wants kind of document, but you also have to understand the requirements. You know, what is it you really need at the end of the day? There's lots of great tools and toys to play with. At the end, my budget is very limited, and to meet the demands of the budget, I still have to deliver the services that enable the workforce here to move forward.
And that's probably the most difficult is getting the customer to understand what's the mission need for this next cool thing or next cool toy. And that was actually, my follow-up was going to be about how is the customer involved. So currently, are they involved? Do they send you emails and you collect the emails and next year you're going to do more of a more formal planning? Or what's the big difference going to be between this year and next year in terms of strategic planning?
I'm trying to get the knee-jerk reaction out of it. That's the problem. I'll get an email, hey, we'd like this, we'd like that. And it's at the moment, I need this tomorrow, I need this 5 weeks from now. There's no sense of, I've got to work through a budget. I mean, everybody has lots of money in the S&T world. The IT world doesn't always have lots of money. And S&T doesn't have all the money in the world they want, but they do have a good fair share. But I need to get the knee-jerk reaction. I need to have that long-term conversation. What is it you want? Where do you want to go? I know they want more BlackBerry's devices. Well, the Navy is kind of trying to restrict the numbers of BlackBerry's. They're trying to hold IT costs down. So we have to be smart. What can we do without BlackBerry's? We have to look at those kinds of things. But, yeah, having that conversation, I think, you know, next year, having a forum where people can discuss what we want. We have user forums now. We meet quarterly with regular users and brief them on what we're working on, what we're doing, trying to solicit feedback. You know, where do you want to go? What do you need? But we don't get a lot of that. They're more in receive mode, and I need more of that interaction. What is it you want? And I've got to work that. So that's one of my priorities this year is to work that project.
A lot of CIOs are changing the makeup of their office to be more customer-focused, customer-centric, meaning they're maybe having an associate CIO or a deputy CIO in charge of, you know, this part of product development or that part of the mission area. Have you guys started down that path at all, or how are you serving your customers maybe a little differently? I think the strategic plan is a great example of one way.
So the strategic plan also has an operations component. We distill a second plan out of that, which is our operations plan, which looks at about a 15-month window of the projects that we're going to work or we see on the immediate horizon. And then we convey that to the users through our user forms, what we're working on, and update them there. I have a deputy CIO who is working some of the projects also, some of the more advanced projects, such as the mobility projects. He'll be running some of the tests this year with the tablets and that, and we'll convey those results back out. We've encouraged our project management office to engage in bi-weekly or monthly meetings with user forms of specific applications that are problematic for us. So they can have discussions with them, find out what the users think, where are their problems, where are they struggling, what's good, what's bad. So we've kicked that off recently. You know, we just filled the PMO position. So that's just started. We've had a couple of our applications people meeting with some of the application leaders, the lead users, to field complaints, but I want to be more proactive. I want to get out in front of that, and with the PMO on board now, we can do that.
I want to go back to the project management office in a second, but before we do that, mention the operation plan. And I know that vendors listen to my show, and they're going to add the biggest question you'll get from this show so far is, well, can I see that plan? So is that a public document, or is that something that is kind of just internal only?
It's an internal only because we try to assign costs and budget numbers to that, and I don't really want to share that information publicly. I will share the intent, what we want to do, and where we're trying to go. That part I'm happy to share because I think from an industry side, they're my partners. They can help me get where I want to go, and I need those partnerships. So I'm not shutting anybody out. I just won't give them the whole plan because of the sensitivity. There's some business-sensitive information in there. But, again, I look at all the vendors out there as partners, and some of them bring me things I need. Some bring me things that I don't need, and I've got to be able to pick and choose through that. But, again, they're partners with me, and their success and my success are coupled together.
I think it's helpful to know because I think, you know, one of the questions I know people always listen for is acquisitions or potential opportunities. And let's talk about that project management office real quick. You said you recently just filled the role. Now, is this a one-person shop? Is this a multi-person shop? Give me a sense of how it works, and who'd you hire?
We hired an individual. He came over from DISA. where he had done software development, software projects over there, and had done some cloud work, and all areas that we were going to. So Morali came over and joined us. And so he's a one-person government lead. And then and the way our operation is structured is government provides oversight in many of the divisions, and then it's all contractor support underneath him. So under him, he has about five people who work directly with him through the project phases of both hardware and software. And then we matrix in others as needed, our systems engineering support, which is called contracted out. They make be matrix in to help support projects on the hardware side or the network side. Our lead on our network operations piece will jump in there also and help them on there. But it's a one government lead, government supervised, government oversight, but the project work itself is conducted by the contractors. And then we have a separate contract for independent verification and validation, IVNV, who then goes back and look oversights the project to make sure to point out issues and problems so we catch those before it gets too late.
Is this something that's new of a project management office for you guys? Because I know, again, when I talk to other CIOs, one of the trends I'm also seeing is setting up bigger offices, kind of what you set up with a government person, maybe some contractor support, to really take over specific projects. And especially with the push to agile and iterative development, that's another big trend I'm seeing. How does that all fit into what you're doing with this project management office?
So the project management office isn't new here. It's already been in existence. The issue for us now was establishing it so it stays focused. Priorities before were spread, and the focus on getting projects done kind of waned. Now we have with the IVNV support staff, it's more focused on what we're trying to do. We have a couple of codes. You're talking about Agile. We have a couple of codes that are doing software redevelopment with Agile computing, and the person who's leading it, Morali, is an Agile person. He knows Agile, so he's working with those folks. Again, they don't work for us, but he's helping them with some insights into the system.
Let me shift gears for a second. You mentioned cyber earlier, too, as part of the strategic plan. Navy specifically has focused a lot of effort on cybersecurity, the host-based security system for a while. You guys, I think, are implementing that. Give me a sense of what you're doing with cyber to improve it. And obviously, there's some sensitivities here, so tell me what you can.
Last fall, there was an incident. It was in all the papers and all Native Dancer. And fortunately, it didn't affect us too much. We were lucky there. We weren't in the core of NMCI, but we didn't have to move out of there either. So we've implemented HBSS, the host-based system security system. We actually were an early implementer, a little ahead of the schedule. We're watching how it performs and some of the issues it creates for us. It does take a lot of computing power, so it tends to affect the servers at times. We're figuring out, we're still tweaking it. It's gotten a lot better. HBSS has been a very good tool for us so far. I can't complain. And we've then tapped it with, we're trying to use the SCOM system from Microsoft to help deploy patches and updates to the software. Instead of manual implementation, we can push it out directly, and we're just starting that process with SCOM. In the past, it's been manual intensive to get these patches installed across the server base. Part of it, what's helping us now, is we virtualized. We've gone, when I first came on board, there were over about 350 physical servers. We're now down to about 130 VMs, 140 VMs. And so that's worked out really well. We'll be down with the blades were purchased here in 2008. We're going to do a refresh, and we'll be down to 14 blades because the newer blades have higher capacities, better operating profile. So we'll have extremely reduced our footprint. And I'm very proud of that.
Just to be clear, you went from 350 servers to 130 to 140 virtual machines, and you're going to even get down even lower to about 14?
There'll be 14 blades. So those blades are hosting the VMs. Right now, I think we have 21 blades hosting those roughly 130, 140 VMs.
Okay, that makes sense. When you start getting into the server specifics, you're going to lose me, so I want to make sure we get the numbers right. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, and we can talk a little bit more about cyber and big data and some other things. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Wyckoff, the Chief Information Officer for the Office of Naval Research.
Here's Har Sandhu, Division Chief of the Mobile and Remote Access Division, Bureau of Information Resource Management, Department of State, on the Federal Executive Forum on Mobility and Government, sponsored by CA Technologies.
Now, if you look at the traditional legacy way of doing things over the life cycle for refreshing technologies, 3 to 4 years, now you're looking at new mobile devices coming every quarter, every 6 months, new OS coming out. How do we offset those costs?
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to Federal News Radio.
Welcome to the new normal, Gov on the Go. Today's government is all about mobility, but while the device is one thing, managing the information is everything. CA Technologies brings enterprise mobile management solutions to the federal marketplace. Mobility the CA way lets government IT easily and securely manage users, devices, and apps anytime, anywhere, and on any device. For more information, visit capublicsector.com. That's capublicsector.com.
The Insider Threat Report is brought to you by HITRUST and Carahsoft.
$18 billion.
That's a big number, and I think that number was put up by DOJ a few years ago of the amount of money that was lost in one calendar year from economic espionage, primarily via China.
National Counterintelligence Executive Bill Evanina. He says the current estimate is a lot higher.
Between $4 and $400 billion.
In some cases, insider threats at agencies and companies leave the door open for that money to flow out. I'm J.J. Green.
You've virtualized your IT infrastructure and moved to the cloud, and you're realizing the benefits. But do you know what your virtual and cloud admins are doing? HITRUST software helps agencies operate securely in the cloud and protects against insider threat. With HITRUST's automated two-man rule, encryption, and continuous monitoring, agencies can stop insider threats before they happen. Learn how HITRUST can help you know what you don't know. Visit InsiderThreatReport.com. That's InsiderThreatReport.com.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Today's Human Capital Management Report, brought to you by Graduate School USA.
Get ready, federal employees. Your office space is about to get smaller. Executives from six of the largest agencies say they plan to reduce the average square footage per employee by as much as 50%. DHS says its new offices will average 150 square feet per person, down from 200, while Justice is setting a goal of 130 square feet. The effort is part of the Obama administration's Freeze the Footprint initiative, started in 2013.
Tomorrow's success depends on the decisions you make today. Graduate School USA is here to help your agency succeed with training and development services that enhance productivity, efficiency, and careers. Their government-focused curriculum is designed to meet federal workforce requirements with delivery and customization options that meet your organization's unique needs. As you make choices about your FY14 training budget, you can count on their schedule of guaranteed-to-go courses and smart savings on multiple registrations. Visit graduateschool.edu to learn more.
Did you know that birthday parties help build confidence in kids?
Yeah. Did you know that giving kids less sugar before bedtime helps them sleep better?
Oh, totally. Did you know that friendly kids have more friends?
Everybody knows that.
Hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
I didn't know that.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Like Federal News Radio on Facebook for a look at some of the top federal stories each day. Plus, we'll give you a taste of what goes on behind the scenes. Find us at facebook.com/Federal News Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today is Gary Wyckoff, the Chief Information Officer for the Office of Naval Research. Now, Gary, before break, you had talked about some cybersecurity changes, and the automated patching is something that every CIO struggles with. What kind of benefits are you already seeing? What kind of challenges?
Well, the big problem for us is testing. Is we have to have that window to test against an application. Sometimes we're afforded that window. You get a 30-day to do a patch. You get enough time that you can test it against an application. Many times we're not afforded that luxury, and we have to take Microsoft's word for it or Oracle's word for it that, hey, they've pre-tested, it doesn't affect anything, and you implement it. Now, a lot of times, you know, they're running operating systems that aren't turned down, stigged, like the DOD environments. So when they say a patch works, it's maybe not interacting with parts of the operating system, or it's interacting with parts of the operating system that we can't use or have been locked down. We don't have that problem often, but every now and then we do. Having automated the process speeds up the implementation, whereas before we were taking, you know, pretty much the entire time allotted to get them and then running late on some of the issues. Now we're pretty much finishing on time, and I think right now we only have one outstanding patch, and that's only because we're still running the 2003 operating system. And once we, on the one particular system, and once we finish that upgrade, which would be in the next month or so, that IAVA will go away and will be compliant.
You mentioned a couple things a couple times during our conversation, NMCI. I know the Navy is moving over to the NGEN environment. What's the latest for you guys? Are you guys there yet? When are you heading to NGEN?
We are scheduled to fully cut over to NGEN during the month of September. And by the end of September, we should be cut over. Some of our field offices have begun to cut over. The cutover is pretty much seamless to everybody, except, you know, we're going from contractor-owned, contractor-operated to government-owned, contractor-operated. But it's been pretty seamless so far. The office has been doing a very good job. The NGEN office has been doing a very good job keeping everybody informed of problems and issues, where successes have been, where their struggles have been. I don't see any big problems for us cutting over. And again, as I said, we're supposed to go by the end of September. And then they're having a big meeting. NGEN office is having a big meeting out in San Diego at the end of September with the CIOs to discuss the road ahead and the architectures.
Let me move over to another topic, big data. I know as a scientific organization, a research organization, you guys probably have more data than you know what to do with, and you probably have that request for tools and analytics. From a CIO's perspective, what are you guys doing around big data? How are you ensuring that your scientists, your engineers, your researchers have the tools needed to kind of deal with that big data challenge?
So you ask what keeps me up at night. This is probably one of those things. We have over probably 30 terabytes of data, and what applies to one code doesn't necessarily apply to another, and trying to make sense, it's all raw data. It's not like it's got any type of metadata associated with it. Some users have done that, some have not. So it's very hard trying to assimilate the data. I've met with Microsoft folks in Cambridge, London, about their search engines and how they cull results. So when you kind of search a blob, you get meaningful results. We did some work with Oak Ridge, Tennessee, the labs down there, looking at some of the products they had, trying to analyze data so you get high percentages of accurate information. So if you're looking for, say, unmanned nuclear-powered submarines, for example, that what you get back isn't everything about a submarine. It's specific to that. Some of the work we were doing with Oak Ridge was giving us confidences. You know, 90% of, you know, this article has got 90% of what you want in confidence, or it's 80%. But part of the problem is up front, the people creating that data right now have to put some meta tags in it that helps us understand what's in that package, what's in that folder, what's in that document, what's in that article, so we can begin to align it properly. And that's one of our big struggles. With our KM system, we're going to continue that. We'll be publishing our authoritative sources. And that's probably the start of where it begins, is once we begin publishing authoritative sources, as opposed to having everything on just a drive, our R drive, and searching through a blob, if we have in our KM system just the authoritative signed out documents, the search should be a little better, achieve higher results. But we're working with our KM folks to understand how to better search through that and get the results we want, especially in the wild internet. You know, how do they know that when I put in a travel search for Wisconsin that they return exactly what I want? And I, you know, there's algorithms that they're following and they're using. And so I think we need to understand those algorithms, because maybe we can use those same types of algorithms here and get the results that we need out of the blob.
One of the things that you mentioned was authoritative sources. When you talk about that, define what that means.
It's the authoritative source is the signed out document, the final copy. If you were to go through our drives now, you might find 15 draft copies of a document and then one signed document. When you search, you'll find all 16 versions. Well, which is the one that you want? Why do I have to cull through the 15 to find the 16th one? That's what we're talking about. Or published articles. You know, if this is published in Science Today, you get that article, you get the result you want, not all the drafts that are written in there. You know, we have several researchers who will do multiple drafts of a briefing, and depending on who the audience is, they tailor that a little bit to meet the demands of the information requirements for that group. When you search, you get all of those back, but you don't know which one really is relevant to what you want to do. So that would not be an authoritative source. But the document that signed out said this is the information that you've requested that's been certified, it's been through the test, it's approved for release. Boom, the authoritative source.
We are almost out of time. Before I let you go, I do want to get one more question in there. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of vendors listen to the show. What should vendors know about working with your office? And give us a quick sense of what is your IT budget for 2013 and 2014?
We're open for business. I don't want to discuss the budget number because it's sensitive. It's also going to fluctuate with budget cuts and other things that are going on. I have enough money to do my business, pay the contractors. From a vendor standpoint, I accept meetings. If you want to come and talk to me, I'm open. I meet with all the vendors when they talk. I go to the CIO conferences. I'm open to meet people there. Sometimes I may have staff members in with me, and then after our meetings, I may guide them to the staff member who's leading an area. If something is about IA, I might push them over to our IA lead technology. I might push them to our technology folks. But I'll meet with everybody, pretty much anybody who calls, and we'll have meetings.
All right, good advice, good to know. And now don't blame me when your email box and your phone rings off the hook.
It already does.
It already does, yes. All right, well, that's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My special guest today was Gary Wyckoff, the Office of Naval Research's Chief Information Officer. Gary, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Are you ready to see the Earth like never before? The Ball Aerospace Worldview 3 imaging satellite is set to launch August 13th, going above and beyond to provide superior pictures of the Earth to aid multiple missions, from agriculture to national security. Worldview 3, built by Ball Aerospace for Digital Globe, will return the most accurate, high-resolution commercial satellite imagery ever available. Agility to innovate, strength to deliver. Visit BallAerospace.com. That's BallAerospace.com. Here's Kimberly Hancher, CIO at EEOC, on the future state of government data centers, sponsored by NetApp and Avnet Government Solutions.
So we established a disaster replicated environment for disaster recovery, and now we're planning to actually move the hosting of our mission systems to the cloud. And that's something that we will be doing over the next 6 months.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Data center consolidation, shared services, CloudFirst, and FedRAMP are forever changing the way agencies view their computing environments. The future state of government data centers classifies and prioritizes workloads based on mission performance, and value requirements are met through the creation of shared, dedicated, performance, and cloud-based infrastructures. In this state, agencies are able to achieve their missions and meet their requirements. Learn how NetApp solutions help agencies support this new state. Visit NetApp.com.
The Insider Threat Report is brought to you by HITRUST and Carahsoft.
$18 billion.
That's a big number, and I think that number was put up by DOJ a few years ago, of the amount of money that was lost in one calendar year from economic espionage, primarily via China.
National Counterintelligence Executive Bill Evanina. He says the current estimate is a lot higher.
Between $4 and $400 billion.
In some cases, insider threats at agencies and companies leave the door open for that money to flow out. I'm J.J. Green.
You've virtualized your IT infrastructure and moved to the cloud, and you're realizing the benefits. But do you know what your virtual and cloud admins are doing? HITRUST software helps agencies operate securely in the cloud and protects against insider threat. With HITRUST's automated two-man rule, encryption, and continuous monitoring, agencies can stop insider threats before they happen. Learn how HITRUST can help you know what you don't know. Visit InsiderThreatReport.com. That's InsiderThreatReport.com.